Drowning in debt versus government shutdown. Which would you prefer? So writes, or so asks, Adam Brandon in an article in Fox Business. Adam Brandon joins us right now for this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Adam, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks very much for having me.
First of all, when you talk about government shutdown, I thought that was something earlier this year, something that the president probably would not want to repeat. Are you talking about now, going forward? Talk about that.
We still have some budgets, and we still have some of the, some debt ceiling issues. Whenever we've had a fix, that's usually been a very temporary fix to just kind of let's keep things open for a few months and kick the can down the road. So we're going to be facing in the coming weeks another opportunity for an actual confrontation over our spending priorities. And Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats, they're often, their stance are, well, we're going to need to spend a whole lot more money. And that's setting up a conflict with priorities with the president, who's also saying, hey, we need, if we are going to spend some more money, the only money we're really looking for here that we need is a lot of this sort of border wall. So some of those issues start getting wrapped up, and then the threat comes of a budget shutdown. And frankly, the last budget shutdown was supposed to be so horrific and so terrible. And well, what did it really end up doing? We ended up getting the GDP report, and it ended up being just fine. In fact, it was one of the best first quarters that we've had in years. So I just look at it that I think so much of the government shutdown is just a much ado about nothing, and it is silly. But at some point here, we do need to start getting serious about the debt and the deficit in this country. And if that means we have to have a shutdown to kind of start getting people, a little shaken up and woken up to the threats we face, so be it. I'm all for it.
Okay, first of all, why is the debt such a problem?
Well, the debt is a problem, and this is a particularly curious problem that we're facing right now, where we have massive economic growth, close to 3% here and over 3%, but we're still getting close to $1 trillion in deficits.
Wow.
So the reason for that is that, well, first of all, we have a demographic problem in the United States right now, where you have a lot, as the baby boomers age into retirement, you're seeing an increase in Social Security, Medicare costs. And then you have another problem here, which is the spending, federal spending outside of those programs also continues to grow. So even if your economy is growing at 3%, if your debt load is growing at 5%, you're growing too fast for the ability of your economy to handle. And the problem is right now we are facing record low interest rates. But if you add 1% or go back to 5.5% historically more average interest rates, you are looking at adding hundreds of billions, if not $1 trillion, to our spending. And that could tip us into crisis. We're already approaching the next couple years, and this is something that should be very sobering for all your listeners. We are approaching in the next very short period of time, 4 or 5 years maybe, where we're going to be spending more on our interest than we do on our defense. And that should be terrifying.
Well, what does this mean, for example, for my grandchildren, this runaway national debt?
We don't know what it means for your grandchildren exactly, but we do know what it's meant historically. And whether you go back to the Roman Empire in the 300s, the Roman Empire collapsed in many respects because they started to debase their currency. You go to Europe in the 1930s. A lot of that was based on turning the printing presses on. So what ends up happening is we earn our salaries in dollars. Our savings are in dollars, and we have to have faith that basically a dollar is more or less going to be similar tomorrow as it is today. I mean, we expect a little bit of inflation, but if we can't picture what the value is of the dollar is 5 years or 10 years, then you get into a currency crisis, and that will absolutely just put investment and long-term economic planning, just freeze up the system. And the reason that this would happen is that if you have so much debt and so much interest the government can, the most likely scenario is that the future governments, to meet their obligations, will just print more cash. And that is what would be so, that would pretty much end the American way of life for anyone, for their children and grandchildren.
Huh. Well, I mean, we've seen runaway inflation in Venezuela, and it's unbelievable. I forgot what the figure was, but there was a staggering amount of their currency, which 20 years ago or 25 years ago was pretty stable. But it took a lot of those pesos or whatever, the bolivars, I think it is, to buy a chicken. And so, you know, Venezuela is a basket case economically. But what's crazy to me, you saw, I'm sure, parts of the recent debates with the Democrats. They were asked, well, do you think that we should be paying taxpayers' money? I don't think they said the word or phrase taxpayers' money, but we, the government, should be spending money for the health care of these illegal aliens who come to this country and make it. And they all seem to have raised their hand saying, yep, let's just keep spending more money. Elizabeth Warren, yep, let's, forgive all the college debts and, keep this thing going up and up and up as far as the spending.
Well, there is a complete breakdown when I watched what the Democrats were talking about of reality, of economic reality. And I always say that economics, which is often referred to as the dismal science, economics has laws that are as strong as gravity. You can't force money to do things it won't do. And I believe that the Democratic Party thinks there's an easy solution, which is just raise taxes on the wealthy. Well, what is the wealthy? Is it people who make over $1 million or is it people who make over $100,000? And next thing you know, you're ending up raising taxes on just about everyone. And what does that tax revenue do? Well, from all these proposals you're hearing on the Democratic stage, you could be raising taxes to 100% on many groups of wealthy people in America, and you won't come close to covering up the tab that they're trying to propose. So the taxes just don't work there. But the second thing is, if you did raise taxes to these levels, you would also see a complete collapse in investment, which would actually precipitate a collapse in the economy. Mm. So next thing you know, if you made these promises, it's the same thing. How do you meet these promises? Chances, history tells us what countries do is they turn on the printing presses. And once you do that, you have these situations like in Venezuela where people are going to their spouses who have a job, trying to get them paid every hour or by lunch, and then going to go see what's cheaper, what can I afford right now, chickens or diapers, and spending the money immediately because you know your chickens and diapers will be costing more by the end of the day than they do now. When I was a younger person, I was traveling and I was in Turkey, and I actually saw them putting prices in chalk, because the prices would change that much throughout the day. So what you paid for a cup of coffee in the morning was different from lunch, was different from after work. They literally had to keep changing their prices throughout the day to keep up with inflation. And if people say that can't happen here in the United States, ladies and gentlemen, it can happen here in the United States.
Wow. Okay, President Trump, where does he fit in this? I have a close relative of mine who has said, Trump is not so great because he's allowing this deficit to keep ballooning over time. You know, I thought he should be, curbing the spending, the government spending. What are your thoughts?
Well, I actually think there is some legitimacy there. I am disappointed not just with President Trump, but with all Republicans in their inability to take spending seriously. Now, I will say this about the president. His budget, which is generally considered the blueprint that what White Houses and presidents, what their funding priorities are. President Trump's last two budgets that he's proposed have been fantastic when it comes to spending.
Oh.
I mean, he slaughters all the sacred cows when it comes to spending priorities. And I'm also hearing long-term, when I talk to people in the White House, long-term proposals that I've never heard from any Republican or any Democrat that would show the president is very serious about getting out of our debt problem by two things. Number one, fast-tracking economic growth, and you do that by lowering regulation. You do that by lowering tax rates. And then, but the next key part to that is flatlining spending, which we just haven't done. Now, I hope, and this is why going back to, I hope the president starts digging his heels in on some of these negotiations, but it is pretty tough when the entire swamp wants to spend, yeah, and to get anything done, everyone's got their hands out for more cash. Yeah. So what I would hope is that the president sends signals that, you know, that we're not going to continue to do the same spending levels that we've been. And I just encourage him to keep rolling out the same budget priorities that he's been rolling out, because if we follow the president's budget, we would actually be on the path to getting back to fiscal sanity. It's, but we need to see it, and the proof is in the pudding.
You know, it's interesting, going back to earlier this year when the president did have this government shutdown and everything, and ultimately it seemed as if, you know, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it seemed as if the Trump administration blinked as opposed to the Democrats. And as I recall, the shutdown was in reference to the border and the border issue. It's interesting, right, by the way, in retrospect, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, they were saying, yeah, there is no border crisis. And now we fast forward to today. And, you know, I think that's personified. The border crisis is personified in that tragic story of the, you know, the young father from Guatemala or El Salvador or whatever, and
absolutely,
his little 23-month-old daughter. I mean, what a tragic thing that they drown on their way to trying to illegally come into the United States. But here's my bottom line thing. The media just was merciless to Trump during that every single day of the shutdown, always finding stories, even of, oh, I voted for President Trump, but I, you know, I'm really suffering because of this government shutdown.
You know, I think it's amazing. I actually wanted to write something about that very subject. When you turn on the television now, you hear about this, the word crisis being used, when just a few months ago, Democratic leadership was refusing to admit that there was a crisis on the border. And yes, it is costing human lives. But what I don't understand is what the president is proposing are changes to our system that would make sure that legal immigrants would have a path to getting to this country, and would also make sure that humanitarian refugees are being settled, not necessarily in the United States, but close to their home. And so they are going to be protected and returned home when the situation changes. That's generally considered a very good option and the best option for dealing with humanitarian crises. A lot of these folks who are coming to the border right now, they're claiming humanitarian, but they're actually economic migrants. Well, so if you are against these common sense reforms the White House has proposed, you are for keeping this system where people are drowning, where people are dying of thirst in the deserts, why people are being sold into sex slavery on the route up here. If you are not for reform, you are for protecting this incredibly humane, inhumane system that is being counted in the lives of people, not just in political points. And so I got to blame people who are not working with this White House constructively to figure out permanent, long-term solutions to our immigration crisis.
Okay, we have about 1 minute left to go. The one thing that is discouraging about this whole issue of the national debt is that the politicians want to get reelected. That's their real goal, or they want to be liked.
Yes.
Therefore, you know, they never met a you know, spending proposal, it seems, that they didn't like, you know. And so they just want to spend, but it's all the other people's money. It's not their money. And less than a minute to go. Your thoughts?
This is the power, Jerry, of where I think it's so, like, your audience. This is why I like to take the time to talk directly to people like you and your audience. The power to fix this is not in the politicians. It's in the people listening to your program. The people listening to your program need to pick up their phones. They need to call their senators and call their members in the House of Representatives and just say, hey, my name is Joe Smith. I am from your district, and I am concerned about the debt and the deficit. When they hear from voting constituents that there are people concerned about the debt and the deficit, the day that there are more people calling asking Congress to rein in spending than asking for new spending is the day it changes. Mm. We get the government, for better or worse, that we put into office. And so democracy is not a spectator sport. It is an active, involved process. And so that's why I implore all of your listeners, as good Americans, please get involved and please let your members of Congress and senators know that, that debt matters to you and your family.
Adam Brandon, freedomworks.org. Thanks, Adam, for being with us.
Thanks very much for having me, and have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.